approach. If we'd had some real medical doctors instead of me.
Don't blame yourself, I said.
He could have been saved, she insisted. I know he could have been saved, or even preserved, frozen, until they could repair the damage to his brain.
Cryonics, she meant. Freeze the body immediately after clinical death in the hope of correcting whatever caused its death and eventually reviving the patient. It had been done on Earth. Even at Selene City on the Moon, people had used cryonics to survive their own death. A wild idea popped into my mind. Freeze him, then, and quickly. Marguerite scowled at me.
We don't have the facilities, Van. It's got to be done.
We have the biggest, coldest freezer of them all, right outside the airlocks, I said. Her mouth dropped open.
Put him outside?
Why not? What's going to harm him out there?
Radiation, she answered. Meteoroids.
Put him in a spacesuit, then. That'll give him some protection.
No, it would take too long. He's got to be frozen quickly.
One of the escape pods, then, I said. Open its hatch to vacuum. It'll cool down to cryogenic temperature in minutes. I could see the wheels turning inside her head.
Do you think?
We're wasting time, I said. Come on. It was an eerie sort of funeral procession. Marguerite and I carrying Fuchs's body down the passageway and ladders, through an airlock, and into one of the escape pods. We were as tender with him as we could be, a strange sort of treatment for a man who had spent so much of his life seething with hate, burning for revenge. But I knew the devils that drove him. I had glimpsed the fury and agony they had caused, and I felt nothing but regret for the life of frustrated rage he had led, a man of enormous strength and enormous capabilities whose life had been wasted utterly. My father, my true father. We put him down on the narrow decking between empty seats inside the second of our three escape pods. It occurred to me that we ought to say some words of ritual, but neither Marguerite nor I knew any. Death was rare back on Earth, and although Fuchs might be clinically dead, we hoped there would be a chance to revive him.
I remember something, Marguerite said as we stood looking down at him, both of us puffing from the exertion of carrying him.
What?
I remember it from a video I saw about old-time sailing ships. Something about ensure and certain hope of resurrection, something like that.
I felt suddenly irritated. Come on, I snapped. Let's get out of here and open the outer hatch so he can freeze down. So we started our 2-month journey back to Earth with a dead man lying in one of the ship's escape pods, its outer hatch open to the cryogenic cold and vacuum of space. It was exactly a week after we broke orbit around Venus and started home that Marguerite told me about Alex's remains. I had a long meeting with the captain of the Truax, answering as many of his questions as I deemed proper. Then we transferred my medical supplies to Lucifer, and our two ships started earthward on their separate trajectories. I appropriated Fuchs's quarters. I was hesitant about moving into the captain's compartment at first, but it seemed like the logical thing to do. If I was to keep the respect of Amar Jagal and the rest of the crew, I could hardly remain in my old bunk in the crew's quarters. I wanted them to know that I was in charge, even if I let Amar Jagal run the bridge most of the time. So I moved into the captain's cabin. There wasn't much ship's business for me to attend to. The crew was happy to be alive and heading home. They were already spending the huge bonuses Fuchs had promised them in their imaginations. In a few cases, more than imagination was involved. I allowed them to communicate with Earth, and I think some of them spent so freely over the electronic links that they'd actually be in debt by the time we landed. I was busy talking with Mickey Cochran and flocks of other scientists, showing them the data and video we had collected on Venus. Perhaps talking with is the wrong phrase. Even light waves needed more than 9 minutes to travel the distance between Lucifer and Earth. We could not have conversations. One side talked and the other side listened. Then we reversed positions. I was surprised that Professor Greenbaum didn't get involved until Mickey told me that he had died. Died, I gasped with surprise. How? I could understand people getting killed in accidents or dying because they didn't get proper medical treatment in time like Fuchs. But Greenbaum must have been in the center of a great university. What on earth could have killed him? Mickey couldn't hear my blurted question, of course. She simply went on.
The official cause of death was renal failure, but it was really just old age.
He never took rejuvenation therapy, and his internal organs simply wore out. How could a man allow himself to die when he didn't have to? I simply could not understand the man's way of thinking. Life is so precious. He died a happy man, though, Mickey added with a smile. Your telemetry data about the volcanic eruptions convinced him that he was right, and Venus is starting an upheaval phase. I wondered if she thought so, too. When it came my turn to talk, I asked her. Nearly 20 minutes later, her reply reached my screen.
We'll see, she said noncommittally.
It was shortly after that conversation with Mickey that Marguerite came to my compartment, looking very serious, very somber. What is it? I asked, gesturing her to a seat in front of the desk. I'd been reading one of Fuchs's crumbling old books, something about gold mining in the Yukon nearly 2 centuries ago.
Your brother, she said,
sitting tensely on the front few centimeters of the chair. My heart clenched in my chest. Is there anything left of Alex? Anything at all?
There was a fine powdery residue inside his spacesuit, Marguerite said.
Ashes?
Yes, ashes.
It all flashed before my eyes again. Alex trapped inside the escape pod, broiling alive on the merciless surface of Venus. How long did it take? Did he open his visor and let death come quickly? As if she could read my thoughts, Marguerite said,
His suit was intact. Apparently he remained in it until the heat overcame him.
I sagged back in the swivel chair. Her voice faltered. Then she swallowed hard and resumed.
He left a message for you.
A message? Every nerve in me jangled. Marguerite reached into her coverall pocket, took out a slim data chip, and reached across the desk to hand it to me. I saw that it had Van scrawled across it.
It was in a thigh pouch of his suit. I presume it's a message, she said. I haven't run it.
I held the chip in the palm of my outstretched hand. This is all that's left of Alex, a voice in my mind told me. Marguerite got to her feet.
You'll want to look at it in private, she said.
Yes, I mumbled. It was only when she reached the door that I thought to add,
Thank you.
She nodded once, then left, gently closing the door behind her. How long I sat there, staring at the chip, I don't know. I think I was afraid to run it, afraid to see my brother dying. I knew that he wasn't really my brother, not genetically, but there was no other way that I could think of Alex. He'd been my big brother all my life, and now I realized that he was thinking of me in the last agonized moments of his life. Had he known that his father was not my father? Unlikely, I thought. Martin Humphreys would never tell anyone, not even his much-loved son, that he'd been cuckolded by his most hated enemy. With enormous reluctance, I clicked the chip into the desktop computer. Strangely, I noticed that my hand was steady. My insides weren't jumpy either, not anymore. I felt glacially cold, almost numb. The only emotion I felt was a consuming desire to learn what Alex wanted me to know in his last moments of life. The computer screen lit up, and there was Alex, his face barely discernible behind the visor of his helmet. The picture was weak, grainy. He was inside the escape pod, sitting in front of its communications console in his sealed spacesuit. I don't know if this will ever get to you, little brother, he said. I'm afraid I've made a mess of this mission. The audio quality was poor, but it was Alex's voice, a voice I thought I'd never hear again. Tears sprang to my eyes. I wiped at them as he continued speaking. Van, there's something in the topmost cloud deck of Venus that's eroded phosphorus's gas envelope so badly that we've sunk down to the surface. I've tried to contact Earth, but it looks as if whatever it is that's destroyed us knocked out the communications antennas, too. I caught myself nodding as if he could see me. I don't know if this chip will ever get to you. I imagine the only way it could would be for someone to come down to the surface of Venus and find the wreckage, and I doubt that anyone would be foolhardy enough to try that for a long, long time. Not unless they were offered a $10 billion prize, I thought. Van, The night before I left, I told you that I wanted to help the Greens by bringing back imagery of a world where greenhouse warming has run amok.